Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's trending?
What's trending is presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. It's a Red Friday in Kansas City. At 1 o'clock today, Andy Reid will give a final injury update heading into this one. Everybody keeping an eye on Isaiah Pacheco and Charles Omenihu. Maybe he'll flat out rule them out. We'll see. They've both been limited participants in practice the last 2 days, so usually a sign that they won't be available. We'll find out if they just flat out rule him out already or we play the questionable game heading into Sunday.
He'll probably list him as questionable, but I'm starting to think they're not going to play. You made me bet they're not playing on Sunday. We'll see how they handle it, but with a short week right behind it against the Raiders, why rush him into action then have to make him play 5 days later? Next up on Watch Training, if you missed it earlier today, the New York Giants have cut Daniel Jones. Per his request, he was playing scout team safety yesterday for the team. Went in, asked if they would let him go. They said okay. That gets them out of the injury guarantee. Daniel Jones will be a free agent as of 4 o'clock on Monday. He has to clear waivers. No one's going to pick him up because they know it. An $11 million per game, I think, or something nuts. Game check. They're not going to pick that up. He'll be a free agent about 4 o'clock on Monday. We'll see if another team interests him in this season's turnaround. I still think he'll be a backup somewhere in the league next year. But yeah, the Giants have cut Daniel Jones, Tommy DeVito, Drew Locke, and they picked up some guy off the street, Tim Boyle or something, to be the third string guy. They pushed him to fourth string after they picked up Boyle or some other quarterback I've never heard of.
Just for our own theater, as I said earlier, on Monday afternoon, the Dallas Cowboys should sign Daniel Jones and start him 3 days later or whatever on Thanksgiving. And give us,
please,
Jones versus DeVito, 3 o'clock on Thanksgiving.
Yes, at least that's got some juice. Currently, that game has no juice.
Next on What's Trending, we got the MVP finalists and award winner announced last night from Major League Baseball. No surprises. Aaron Judge, unanimous AL MVP award winner. Shohei Ohtani on the NL side, unanimous MVP award winner. As far as the actual voting, Bobby Wood Jr. got all the second place votes. Further down the list, even you had somebody like Seth Lugo.
Ooh,
getting a 10th
place vote.
A single 10th
kudos
place vote. So Juan Soto finished third, Gunnar Henderson fourth, Jose Ramirez of the Guardians fifth on
in
the
fairness,
American League side.
For a team that made the playoffs, if you made me rank out, like if there was a Royals MVP and we all voted on it, the people of Kansas City, Bobby Wood Jr. would win it unanimously. Seth Lugo would be second. Right? He's the second most important player for their success this season, Seth Lugo. I don't even think you can argue it probably at this point. Next up on What's Trending, local college football this weekend, Kansas versus Colorado. Suddenly a huge game in the Big 12, 2:30 tomorrow at Arrowhead Stadium. Alex is considering going if you got a free ticket. Kansas State hosting Cincinnati at 7 o'clock and MU at Mississippi State at 3:15.
Nice weather tomorrow in Kansas City. I saw Matt Tate over in Lawrence was reporting that he said maybe they could get to 55,000, which would be the largest crowd they've had for these games at Arrowhead. So, I think there's interest in the game, not to mention it's Colorado. That draws a little bit. And Kansas is playing better football. Chance to spoil the season for the Buffs.
And a chance to get themselves into a bowl game. They win this one. They'll have one more opponent against a bad game to get back to 6-6.
True.
Put themselves in. You know, honestly, they'll probably be a decent draw for a bowl game because they're more entertaining than a lot of the other 6-6 teams. They played some close games this year.
Maybe, but bowl game out of the college football playoff, the attendance of these bowl games now are just brutal.
Gotta get that Pop-Tart bowl,
like, man. People aren't as excited as they were 10 years ago to go to Memphis for a Liberty Bowl berth. No. You know what I mean? It's just not, and it's also not their first bowl game in 15 years like it was a couple years ago or whatever. You know, so we'll see. Next on What's Trending tomorrow night right here in Kansas City, the NWSL Championship final going on. Of course, KC Kern unfortunately lost in the semis last week, but some awards handed out today. Tim Wachowinga, who led the league in goals, the NWSL MVP.
She can absolutely fly.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Different type of speed for NWSL. She'd be a great player, obviously a good pickup by the Current. It stinks or not in this one because it would have been perfect. 60-degree night in Kansas City under the lights for the final. It stinks. We have to watch Washington versus Orlando instead. But I'm still happy for the city. Hosted championship in this city is nothing to scoff at. That is a really cool accomplishment. And the reason why this city gets that is because they purposely built a stadium for a professional women's team. Good Morning America was here. Like, right? People are interested in Kansas City because the championship game is here. Very, very cool. It's going to be in Kansas City. Sad the Current aren't in it. Really happy for Chiwinga for winning the MVP. More than deserving, by the way. Everyone thought she was going to win it. Last thing on What's Trending, Jason Kelce has officially announced he'll host a late-night show starting January 4th for ESPN. It'll be 5 consecutive weeks, only on Friday nights. It'll star a lot of athletes and some celebrities as well. It'll take place over on ESPN. Like, he's got the right personality for it. We've said before, I mean, I think he's got a... They really think he's a rising star in their umbrella, so they're going to give this late night show thing a shot with Jason Kelce. We'll see if it's any good.
Why not? Definitely give it a chance. Something different from ESPN. That's what's trending here on Cody and Gold. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, Fan Club Friday, as we send you off to a holiday weekend, perhaps for some of you. This might be your last day of work for a week or so. That is going to be a fun 1 o'clock hour. You've got some drinks, some canned cocktails.
Yeah, nothing
crazy.
Did
you bring
just like
Sprite
a couple of
this time as well?
No, I just brought like a couple of, you know, like similar, those like Simply drinks and some of the things I know Drew will drink. Like I try to make sure he's taken care of.
So we've
he
got
did
that.
Drink the old fashioned we had a week ago.
There we go.
If it's, look, IPA beer, I'm not drinking a, I don't want to have it at all. Old fashions, vodka, tequila.
Sure.
Okay. I'm down.
All right. So
I'm in.
We'll have that. Haley Lewis from KC Sports Network is going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour as well. Let's get back into the Chiefs a little bit. And DeAndre Hopkins playing time was a big topic after the Bills game. 47% of the snaps. The reason for that, like, nobody has a definitive reason. Everybody has theories on why that was actually the case. Is it preserving someone that's a little bit older in wide receiver circles? Is it the compensation thing? Was it just the man-to-man matchups against the Bills? Were they holding him back just because they know there's a rematch? Whatever. Everybody has their theory on what it is. I think it's probably a combination of the man-to-man defense and also that, hey, this is still a 32-year-old wide receiver that we're trying to be really cautious with. But the numbers and the eye test tell you they're a much better offense when he's involved. Duh. And
they got to get him more involved
this weekend, though. Is this the game? I don't know, man. Against Carolina,
we're having a hard time because, like, there's a real balance of, I think that this is one of the easiest ways to make the Chiefs offense better is to involve DeAndre Hopkins more, play more snaps, be on the field more, be intentionally targeted more. But I can't fight with your argument is this the week to fire it up? Because, I mean, historically, no, this would not be a great time. And this is a player who was dealing with injury for at least a decent chunk of the season. I'll point out one thing. Because of the injuries, DeAndre Hopkins really hasn't played. He doesn't have that much weight on his body this year. The most snaps he played in any singular game was when he played 41 snaps for Tennessee against Indianapolis earlier in the year. For Kansas City, he has played, I apologize, the most was against Tampa Bay, 51.
Yeah, over time, he had nine targets, eight catches.
51 for them, but 26 in this previous game. Why? Is he feeling a little bit of the weight? Too much pressure? Like, half? half the snaps than he had in the first week when he had had no practice time for Kansas City. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that was the mystery.
Against Buffalo?
Yeah, as I said, everybody has their theory, the three or four that I mentioned. The other part, too, this applies to the rushing attack. I agree they should have ran the ball more, but why were the carries limited? They only had 8 or 9 offensive possessions. So we have to remember when we're talking about the actual carries
numbers,
or numbers specifically, when you only have 8 or 9 possessions, everything's going to be watered down. That's why part of the Bills' game plan was very effective. They kept the ball out of the limited possessions. That's the formula that can work for a team like Buffalo against Kansas City. But the percentage, I'm with you. I don't know if you think we're going to see 75 or 80% on Sunday. If the Chiefs are comfortably ahead,
that's something it needs to be eventually.
Yeah, if the Chiefs in the playoffs, I'm not worried about it. In the playoffs, D Hop is getting 80% of the snaps. I have no doubt in my mind. In a divisional round game, AFC title game, if he's healthy, he's getting 80% of the snaps. This Sunday, I could see it being 55, 60% or less based off of the opponent, the quick turnaround, as we said over and over, Black Friday game next week against the Raiders. And if you're comfortably up, hopefully, in the fourth quarter, then why waste any of those snaps with D-Hop?
Because I didn't want to come into the conversation ill-informed. Because there's been plenty of games this year he's played less than 40% of the snaps, but he's been dinged up on a miserable Titans team. I looked at last year's team, a team that was competitive for the Titans, and at which he had 1,000 yards for them. The snap count percentage he would have had in that game on Sunday would have been lower than any single game he played for the Titans all of last season. He has in his career historically been an 80% snap guy, like most number one wide receivers. So, like, I could chalk some, but he's been here for a month. And I guess that's not when I anticipated the numbers to go down. I kind of thought it would just be a slow build to 70%. And then, come postseason, you can crank that up for the rest of the way. Why it went down and their effectiveness on offense seemed directly related to me. Before they got him, his passer rating was 20 points lower than after they got him. So obviously, I do think that he's probably the key to unlocking what is a better offense the rest of the way, which means he has to be on the field. If he's the key to unlocking, I need him on the field. And I know that there's a risk of injury and all the other things, but you're simply not winning a Super Bowl unless DeAndre Hopkins and the offense show a little bit more improvement.
For sure, but they're also not winning a Super Bowl in week 11 or week 12. And last week against Buffalo or this week in week 12 against Carolina. So yeah, I think it'd be something to watch on Sunday where that percentage is at. His high watermark is, yes, the Tampa game, snap-wise and production. 9 targets, 8 catches, over 80 yards, had the 2 touchdowns. We all know that was his best performance in a Chiefs uniform. And since then, it's been a little more watered down, but also so has the offense. In the Denver Broncos game, the offense scored, 16 points. And this past week, as I said, the possessions were limited against Buffalo. So I think some of it kind of goes hand in hand, and we'll see. I'm surprised nobody's asked Andy about that this week, I'll be honest, or Matt Nagy and during the coordinator availability. I haven't seen any quotes come out that would suggest that anybody asked, hey, what do you guys, was that plan? Was that the plan going in? What do you, what's the workload like? Are you guys trying to hold him back? Just to get an answer. And I don't know if we'll get that. Andy is going to speak at 1 o'clock, but I don't know if anybody will ask him that or not.
Feels like Hopkins is going to play 30% of the snaps. Aminihu and Pacheco aren't going to play because it's the Panthers.
Yeah.
I guess that would be and Andy would never answer this, honestly. If this were the Bills this week, do you think Aminihu and Pacheco play?
Yes.
If it's the playoffs today,
If it's the playoffs, everybody's playing.
Okay.
Let's just be, yes. Mm-hmm. If it's the playoffs, everybody's playing.
Last week, I just don't think they were ready. They had activated their windows, but they weren't really practicing in any kind of significant capacity. But it's like, I don't know. I might just be a blind optimist because we've been around the Chiefs so long. I am convinced there is an untapped top 5 offense, even still, without Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown. I'm convinced it's there. Like Patrick Mahomes and Pacheco and DeAndre Hopkins, and even an aging Travis Kelce and Noah Gray, I think there's a top 5 to 7 offense in there, and not what they have been, which is 10 to 15th. I think it is hidden in there with Xavier Worthy. Maybe that's just unlocking that somehow turns the key, but I'm convinced it's in there. DeAndre Hopkins, I think, is the key to unlock it. I think that makes all the rest of the cogs turn. I think that's why, Xavier Worthy was getting open downfield a little bit early. Is anyone else not noticed that Xavier Worthy is getting open deep more now that DeAndre Hopkins is here? 3 straight weeks, Xavier Worthy's been standing down the field all by himself. Do I think that's an accident? Even though DeAndre Hopkins has only been here 4 weeks? No, they're obviously correlated. I don't know if it's just going to be so close the entire year and we're just never going to, it's never going to come to realization and we're just going to live in this like sad waiting game where you're kind of expecting it to happen and it never quite does. But I'm convinced there's an offense. Maybe I'm alone on that. I don't know if that's where you are, but like I'm convinced there's a top 5 to 7 offense in this on this team.
The only way that's going to happen is in the playoffs where they flip the switch and they have everybody available. Like in the regular season, you're still saying you think they're going to be a top 5 offense at the end of the regular season?
No, like okay. For the rest of the season. Does
okay.
that make sense?
Okay.
The catching up
I
numbers
I don't know about that, man.
The catching up numbers that's too late. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it's there. I'm saying the potential is there and I just think that they got to find a way to unlock it.
I just think we saw the kind of the blueprint in the playoffs last year. In the playoffs this year, the key, whether they're playing in wild card weekend or they're fortunate to have the bye and they only have to win 2 games to get to a Super Bowl, hopefully that's the case, it's going to be, once again, are they cutting out all the turnovers, which is exactly what they did in the playoffs? Suddenly, is the offensive line protecting Mahomes more, and therefore he's just more confident in what he's got going? And then, of course, Travis Kelce was playing like Hall of Fame Travis Kelce. That's the biggest keys in the playoffs. Again, like I don't want to say like the next 7 weeks or whatever don't matter, but they kind of don't matter, man. Like, they matter for the number one seed and lock that bad boy up.
And that makes all of the things like, you just talked about way easier.
Yeah, like, lock that thing up.
And
but
for less games.
Other than that, like, we all know this is about a build-up to the playoffs, and we have seen evidence that they are, like, not every team is, they are capable of playing a much better brand of football when the stakes are higher. Like, that's something that you might say in another city, and you're like, well, yeah, I would hope so, but I don't know if they'll do it. I know this team because they've done it before. I've seen it. We just saw it last year in a Super Bowl campaign.
I just gave you his postseason stats, yeah. Dude. They're nuts. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
Hey, at least the Chiefs aren't having a player dealing with this injury. Did you guys see the paper in New York messed up on an injury for C.J. Mosley? He's a linebacker for the Jets. And
what did it say?
I think I just retweeted it. Just take a look at the retweet at Alex Gould on Twitter, if you would like, or X, whatever we're calling it. It says Jets Mosley could return after bye week from herniated D and neck. But they didn't spell disc.
Can you herniate that?
I don't know, but they did not spell it herniated disc. That it is in writing
is
in the paper. A herniated
unfortunate
disc.
It's in the paper.
In his neck.
Is that?
Yes. Yeah. Look on my Twitter.
Oh, yeah. It's in the actual newspaper. Yeah. That's.
Oh, the physical paper?
Yeah, not online. No. Online, they can quickly fix it. No. It is in the paper right there in print.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, his injury was way worse than everybody thought. Yes. That's real. That's not made up. That's real. That is real.
I have to find it. It's the headline or it's just in.
Well, it's not the front page headline,
okay.
But it's the headline to the story in the paper. Jets Mosley could return after bye week when they're on a bye week right now. So this is from yesterday's paper, from herniated disc in neck, but they didn't spell disc.
That's really bad. It's not even like it's in the actual article. It's the headline for the story. That's crazy.
Yes, it is.
That is unfortunate. Is that better or worse than what Dusty accidentally said on the air a couple days ago?
This is worse.
This is way worse.
This is in print.
Well, his was on radio. It exists forever.
Yeah, but this is in print.
Technically, it doesn't because the dump button, I guess, but it was.
Well, I mean, it exists on the stream. And it exists on the podcast, on the Odyssey app.
Correct.
We can't get rid of him there, man.
Fair. Anyway. Yeah.
That's why I was asking.
Uh-huh.
Did you enjoy snow football last night?
It was awesome. It was awesome. Look, it was a classic AFC North game. And knowing that you were inside and nice and warm as well, and you're watching the aerial views from inside and outside the stadium on Amazon last night in Cleveland with the lake effect snow really kicking up in the late third into the fourth
that
quarter.
Happened in a hurry. That was
it
awesome.
Did. First half, it was just flurries and like, okay, this is going to be nothing. And then lake effect snow kicked in. And all of a sudden, it presented like a true whiteout condition. Snow globe effect. It was really, really cool. And it ended up being a really entertaining fourth quarter. 27 points were scored in the fourth. We all know by now Cleveland won the football game against Pittsburgh. And there were a couple things that I take away from that. One, as it relates to the Chiefs, now it definitively is a two-horse race for the number one seed.
Agreed.
It's Chiefs-Bills. There's no doubt in anybody's mind at this point.
Because you'd have to finish, I mean, the Steelers would have to win out and beat the, you know, that would include, but like also beat the Chiefs just didn't seem plausible.
So that, and then the other thing is, last night, what was shocking was Mike Tomlin, I thought, made a bunch of mistakes, and typically he doesn't. I think he's one of the better coaches in the league, but whether it was putting in Justin Fields on a 3rd and 4, their backup quarterback, to throw a pass instead of Russell Wilson, made no sense. There was timeout usage that was questionable. That game as a whole, when they still went in the 3rd quarter without a touchdown, which made it 7 straight quarters without a touchdown on offense for the Steelers, that's why they are not in the same category. I know they beat the Ravens last week. They're not in the category of the Ravens, the Bills, or the Chiefs. They're just not. They can win a playoff game with that style. They can't win multiple playoff games. They are not a true threat. Now, if you're a 2 seed and you got to play wild card weekend and you're hosting 7 seed Pittsburgh, if they were to ever fall back to the 7 seed, I don't think they will, but if they did, that's a dangerous opening round game. Am I worried about Pittsburgh finding a way to get all the way to an AFC title game? No, I'm just not. Last night's performance.
Dream scenarios if you told me the Chiefs get the Steelers. Like,
of course.
I'll take that over 2-3 other teams, probably. Not every team in the playoffs, but certainly a few. Do they go long term with Russell Wilson? The Steelers are easily, like, if you just said, right now, for the next 3 years, what are the Steelers? They're one of the most fascinating teams in the league. Do you pay George Pickens? He's certainly one of the most talented wide receivers on the field, but he's getting in fights on Hail Marys. He's blaming the refs in postgame and talking about the weather, not talking about his own play or anything in between. Russell Wilson's on a 1 year, like, $500,000 deal.
Him and Justin Fields are not under contract after this year, so they either have to go sign another veteran, draft a quarterback, or sign Russ, presumably, to like a 2 or 3 year contract with a year,
year or two
guaranteed, or go Daniel Jones, who got cut today by the Giants, and he's available out there next year, something like that. But I think it depends on what happens in the playoffs. If Russell Wilson wins a playoff game with them, I could see the Steelers saying, all right, well, we'll do this thing again. And that's where the Steelers have. That's what's so weird. I would imagine being a Steelers fan here recently, not historically, where they're one of the best franchises in NFL history, but recently, Mike Tomlin's always going to get you to the playoffs, and maybe you're good enough to win a playoff game. If you finish with 10 or 11 wins this year and lose in the opening round, and then next year they bring back Russ Wilson, you know your ceiling is once again the same thing. Mm-hmm. 10 or 11 wins and one playoff win. You're in such
still
a weird,
draft,
like, you're not
eventually
firing anybody over there. Like, Mike Tomlin would be stupid to fire him, but I'm not suggesting that at all. But you're in this, like, you know you're not winning Super Bowls with this current with the way you're currently going about the quarterback position. You're not.
You know what it is like, a lot of this game gave me renewed confidence, cuz we were just talking with the number 1 seed, and I was like doing the math and the Bills, and I'm like, man, if they don't lose 2 of the next 3 games, where the hell are they going to lose? This is just a good reminder. Division games make no sense. Throw out the records. Technically the Browns are on their backup quarterback, although I would say upgrade. They're on Jameis Winston. They're 2-8. They're awful. He threw a costly 4th quarter interception. They still won the damn game. So before I just pencil in win, win, win on Patriots twice and the Jets for the final 3 games of the Bills, those are division games. I could easily lose 1 of those 3 games. When we talk about yesterday, what are the toughest games remaining for the Chiefs? Part of the reason I said the Broncos, if that game matters, admittedly, is because road divisional game. And I don't know what the hell's going to happen in that. That's a toss-up. Those games are like almost always, and I don't know if it's like the history of the NFL, didn't even matter with the records, 50-50. That's a 50-50 game, even if you're the better team. Every time. That's what that game felt like.
Yeah, it's bizarre. The Steelers are just, they're now 0-7 on Thursday night divisional games. Just bizarre. Mike Tomlin's 0-6 now, I think, on road divisional games on Thursday night. Just why, for whatever reason. They had plenty of opportunity to win that game. Early on, when the weather wasn't a factor, they were stopping the Browns offensively. They had a couple 4th downs at midfield that they didn't convert because they brought in Justin Fields and tried to get it through that method, and it didn't work. So, yeah, the Steelers were not impressive at all last night. They'll be a playoff team. I still think they might win that division because they have the head-to-head stuff now over the Ravens. But boy, they look like a team that is not capable of winning multiple games. They're not going to be able to win games with field goals consecutively in the playoffs.
No.
And that's what they do in the regular season at times.
Like, it's weird, too, because I watched that game, and I thought Russ looked pretty good. Like, for the weather.
He started the game. Even at halftime, he had the one fumble, which was big, but he was like 11 of 12 for $1.50 at halftime. It should play in their style that they play in, and it wasn't good enough for them.
Someone says you can't sleep on the Chargers either. They got the same offense as the Steelers. They can't score either. Like, the only time they've scored this year is against the league's worst defense in Cincinnati. That defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. It's terrible. And so, like, I mean, like, I get it. They scored against them, but, like, that's a bad defense they scored against. Other than that, they're scoring the same number of points per game as the Steelers are.
And all those points are basically in this first half, too.
Yeah, they got to shut down after that. Herbert, like, I don't know. You and I have said this before. Very simply with that team is, I'm not saying to never take the Chargers seriously. I'm saying this year's a year too early. You know the teams who you can wait a year before you're like, they're a big, big problem now. They're a good football team. They're going to win a lot of football games. They might win a playoff game. Next year is when we can start talking Chargers. Like, for real, for the first time, and you and I have been making fun of people who've been trying to bring up the Chargers for a decade and been knocking them back. Like, come on, man, guys. Let's not. Harbaugh, I can take. Like, it's a real coach. Real coach, functioning quarterback. I'll take you serious. Versus, you know, I don't know, every other year when they just had, like, Brandon Staley or whoever other. Who are the other terrible coaches they've had? Who was the one before Staley? Anybody remember now?
It's completely escaping me.
Oh,
it's like a Todd or something.
No. Anthony Lynn.
There you go.
That did not.
And before him, was it Norv Turner?
That's too far back.
Okay.
There was that like middle-aged white-looking dude. Kind of looked like
Ken Wisenhut.
Oh, was he the head coach of the Chargers?
I don't remember. Now we're just naming
him. He was the Cardinals coach. I know that for a little bit.
Mike McCoy is the answer I was going for. Mike McCoy. He had like a four-year run, dude. That was Norv Turner was before that. So
that, it must have not been a good run because I couldn't tell you who that is.
They've had 18 of them.
Well, what perfect.
Marty Schottenheimer obviously was before that. But
oh, yeah.
So they're not like the Steelers, you mean? As in they've only had three head coaches in their entire modern history.
Nobody's like them.
That's right. All right, up next, we'll talk a little bit more about this offensive line and also the random question of the day on a Red Friday in Kansas City.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the kids' bop of WAP. Oh my! I'm stunned.
Oh my God.
I'm stunned. Yeah. There's a kids bop version. Now I know officially there's a kids bop version for every song. Then if they can make kids bop to WAP, the bigger the cake, the bigger.
I'm gonna bounce these. What was I gonna say?
There was one part at the end that I needed to make sure I potted down, and
that's kids bop. It should be clean.
Maybe that's a made up kids bop.
Is this official?
No, that's the problem.
Oh, that's not an official Kidz Bop song.
Ooh. The Kendrick Lamar version and this one were parodies. They were not from Kidz Bop themselves.
Oh, not official Kidz Bop account, huh?
Well, I had to make sure that I listened to the whole thing through to be sure that I... The Kendrick one was fine.
This all stems from the new Kendrick Lamar album that's out today. And Cody said he wanted to listen to it. I said, are you going to be picking up your kids rocking the Kendrick Lamar? And then that got us down this rabbit hole.
I think you could play the Not Like Us Kids Bop parody for your kids, and they'd be okay with it.
They ride the bus. Isn't that what it said? Mm-hmm. Or we ride the bus?
Yeah.
We ride the bus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Probably an A minus.
Don't worry about the grades on the test, because it's probably an A minus.
The A minus part is hilarious.
Wow, chef kiss.
A minus. Okay. We'll get to the
really good.
We'll get to the random question of the day. You're in about 12 minutes or so. We're also 25 minutes away from a fan club Friday on Cody Ingold. Haley Lewis from KCSN going to join us in studio. We'll find out what she's been up to. It's been, honestly, I think the last time we had Haley in studio was, what, like 6 months into this show? Right after COVID or something like that? Like, it's been a while.
She was
it's
in?
It's been a bit.
Yeah, it's been a little while, honestly. Maybe we can get her back in the rotation some more. We asked her a couple of other times. Sometimes schedules don't line up, you know?
So we'll talk some Chiefs football and find out what's going on with her coming up in the 1 o'clock hour today. Before we get to all of that, though, I think everybody at this point maybe is almost sick of talking about the left tackle spot. We all know the issue that it's become. I think it's more of a depth problem than an actual starter Wanya Morris problem. It's what happens if he gets hurt. And we referenced the numbers earlier that actually this year Mahomes is being pressured fewer times than he has been since 2019. I know that sounds crazy.
That is shocking.
Because we all watch and we're like, that can't be true. I'm just telling you what the numbers are saying out there. And so that's where I think Mahomes, of course, deserves plenty of criticism as well. And he's acknowledged footwork has been a problem at times for him. And I still wonder when it's coming from, you know, the blind side, is that also going to impact the trust that you have? Somebody that has not been facing as much criticism, one, because so much has been discussed on the left tackle side, but also because maybe his performance is better, is Juwan Taylor.
I think he's been not the problem. And I think that it's easy to like try to make him part of the problem because like the offense feels broken and the tackles are kind of like the low hanging fruit, I think, for Chiefs fans or for analysis right now. I'm just telling you right now, Juwan Taylor has been an above average tackle. Every single statistical metric supports that. Except for penalties, in which he probably leads the league again because he has 9 of them. He's allowed 4 sacks, which is about average. He's not Trent Williams. He's not the single greatest guard of all time, right? He's not Joe Tooney. The guys who just never get... He'll give up sacks every once in a while. He'll have penalties every once in a while. He rates out in the same categories guys like Joe Alt or Ronnie Stanley or other competitive, competent tackles in the NFL. Is he the elite? No.
Yeah, no. Joe Alt's a rookie. He's going to eventually be all pro in his career.
But we already think of Joe Alt as being one of the better ones because that's what happens when you take a left tackle in the top 5. They instantly become Tristan Wirfs. Tristan Wirfs was immediate. By the way, he's the man on a tiny little island all by himself this year. Tristan Wirfs has been the best tackle in football all by himself. You don't have that in Juwan Taylor. So maybe you still think the Chiefs are overpaying. But this is... like somebody had said earlier when I'd said, Juwan Taylor's not the problem. And they said, well, then maybe Brett Veach's evaluation of tackle is. I'll defend Brett Veach a little bit. One, because, again, he built the rosters for all the Super Bowl wins. So he doesn't need that much defending, I would say, in general. But in defense of his planet, tackle hasn't been great. As in, he traded a first-round pick. They won a Super Bowl. But then he had to immediately go of Orlando Brown Jr. because he didn't like the price. He may be overpaid based on the level of performance you're getting in Juwan Taylor. He drafted Kingsley and he's already been benched. Like, so tackle's been a bit rocky for him. That position is a challenge anyway. Most NFL executives will tell you the tackle play across the league is down. But in addition to that, he's doing it with both hands tied behind his back. He's having to pick 28 to 32 with a limited amount of cap space. And you'd be like, well, cap space is his problem. Well, yeah, but that's what comes with being a championship team. You're always up against the cap. So with very little cap and no good draft equity, he's supposed to just find a 15-year left tackle? It ain't that easy.
Well, and that's why long-term, or I guess it's short-term, but it's an off-season conversation, I feel like at left tackle, if you don't believe that Wanya is going to keep developing, and that's the other thing, he could still continue to develop himself.
Yeah, he's a year 3 player.
If he's able to develop, then maybe it changes as the season progresses. But for next season, it feels like they would have to go back down the Orlando Brown Jr. path. What I mean by that is, of course, finding another team that has a tackle that either is playing right tackle that wants to play left, final year of a rookie deal, something, you know, prove it type of deal situation, established tackle though in the league without going free agency. It feels like that could be the path that they have to go down.
I think so. And I mean, maybe that's where they're kind of limited at least by what they can do. But like Juwan Taylor has not been like, it's not a train wreck signing. Remember yesterday, I had mentioned something about Brett Veach. I said, one of the biggest compliments, or JJ Piccolo, one of the biggest compliments to JJ Piccolo is that there aren't a lot of like misses. Like, train wrecks, Jose Guillen, Gilmesh, like, you know, and I could, or even like how bad Alex Gordon's contract went for the Royals after he signed for a major deal. And like, you know, Alex Gordon's an all-time great. He won a World Series with the Royals, so nobody cares. But Juwan Taylor's not been a disaster of a signing. He's just overpaid a little. He's overpaid a little. But that's also what comes with signing a free agent tackle. Like, that's just the price of doing business in a lot of ways. Brett Veach does not have that many just like total whiffs the free agency.
The Juwan Taylor side, real quick, Drew, the Juwan Taylor signing, going back, it's it's still kind of interesting to think about when he first signed. We all thought the team acknowledged that he was going to be a left tackle. We're way past that now.
They're not even entertaining.
No, we're way past that. But I'm just saying, when he first signed, he was asked questions. He was on our show. As a matter of fact, the first day he signed, he called in on our show. We asked him, and he was like, yeah, that's something they've discussed with me. I'll play anywhere kind of thing, but also they've discussed. And that ended like 2 months later. It was very clear that he was not going to play left tackle for this franchise.
Well, and don't, I guess in this case, I'm not going to, you know, you said that they overpaid Cody. If you're not desperate, but if you really want to make sure that you solidify up a position, sometimes that, I think that just generally happens. Like, you want to protect Patrick Mahomes, and you obviously want to hit, and you want to be able to get the best deal. But if you overpay a little bit, but you know that it's good enough to protect your number one quarterback, the best quarterback in the league, then it's good enough. We're sure they're overpaying him, but Juwan's doing a good enough job that I don't know if you can say that it was obviously not a bad signing or anything along those lines.
Can I just tell you, based on win rate at tackle, can I tell you another player he's right? I mentioned a couple of other guys. Can I tell you one more guy that make you feel better about Juwan Taylor's? The other guy in the graphic that should make you feel better is Penei Sewell. How would I told you if he was playing roughly as good a football as Penei Sewell? Like, a little worse, but I mean, that's what you need. Look, he's still the third highest paid right tackle in football. So there's always going to be people be like, I'm getting third best right tackle out of it. He's also in the back end. He's 2 years into this thing. So the numbers started to jump. Few more right tackles get paid, and then you won't feel that way anymore, and then he'll be a league average tackle. And that's right tackle, right? Not right and left, and there's plenty of left tackles making more money than him.
I think this text is correct from the 913-586-7965 asking the question, hey, with what happened last year, especially with the opening night game with Collinsworth, stuff, yeah. Is that a narrative that he'll never be able, and fan perception, he'll never be able to shake? I think it's a fair point. He's not anywhere near what he was the first 5 weeks last year, where it was a huge problem and a liability. And now that he's playing better, but because the left side is an issue, we just lump the two tackles together. I think that is probably something that's going to be very tough for Juwan Taylor to shake from fan perception. That's probably fair.
There's probably some point of that, and I guess I don't think that's out of the question. Same thing applies as anything else. You know, I talked about this, Tony, too. I also weight things on a Super Bowl scale. I don't think mistakes can be all that bad if they ended in Super Bowls in a year. You know?
Well, sure.
It's just like, I think that they're lessened by 10%. Mm-hmm. 15%. Everybody doesn't operate on the Super Bowl scale. You and I do. But, like, there's a percentage of bad decision. Like, Kadarius Toney, if I just ignored what happened at the end of the season, horrible trade. Really bad decision. He did not help you at all, right? If I factor in he had a nice punt return and he caught a touchdown and they won a Super Bowl multiple times when he was a member of the Kansas City Chiefs, and don't care as much. It's a sliding scale, that's all.
We'll get to the random question in a second. A couple people must be watching on our video stream. You can watch anytime you want on our video stream, Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, YouTube. Someone says, Gold, you need to quit the Marlboros, coughing up a storm after a long winning sentence. Honestly, I think I had to scratch my throat. I think Cody and I both made a mistake of eating popcorn during the break. And
not going great?
That was not a good decision. That's a rookie move.
You got like a kernel back there or something?
Rookie move, and that's what I think has prompted the turning the mic off real quick and trying to cough in the background kind of thing. So
the only
apologies.
Downside to having video on you all the time, you
they
know?
Can see everything that's going on.
They got eyes on
but
you.
But
I man.
Don't. I do not smoke, so it's definitely
it's
not
good
that.
To know
I
that
can,
the people
I can
are,
guarantee that.
It's good to know that people are asking about you, though. Like, are you all right?
Yeah,
you know?
They're just checking on you.
Yeah, the popcorn, in hindsight, not smart, although it was very good. Not a smart decision in the middle of a radio show during a break.
What popcorn do you guys have in here anyways?
The Skinny Pop. From the
there's several. Skinny, there's, okay. There's actually two different
skinny
types
pop's
of
good.
Skinny Pop's great.
Skinny Pop is really good.
The text line was also asking about the Royals texting Juan Soto, and they were like, hey, just real quick, I saw that the Royals called on Juan Soto. Is that like a thing? I do actually believe that J.J. Piccolo picked up the call, sucked up his pride, called Juan Soto's agent and said, just real quick, what's the number? They're one of only two. This is what actually makes me like it even better. One of only two small market teams that actually called Juan Soto just to get a feel. Other is the Tampa Bay Rays. A very functional organization. Leave no stone unturned is what I say, Gold.
Yeah.
You know? That's what you do with Juan Soto. Yeah, is the answer probably no 99.99999% of the time? Probably. But what if? You can't get a yes unless you ask.
That's true. You got to shoot your shot. I applaud, I guess, the effort. I still liken this to just me, you know, trying to like or comment on like a Sydney Sweeney Instagram post or
and
whatever.
Hoping that she says,
good effort, nice try, but there's 0% chance it's happening.
That's what this is. You call up Scott Boras. I think that's who his agent is. That's a good guess if it's not.
Probably.
But you call him up and say, hey, we just want to make sure. What's that? What are we looking at? Oh, still $600 million? Okay. Thanks. Nice to talk to you. Goodbye. Like, I mean, so we were just checking. Wait, so he's not suddenly only wanting $300 million and we can do that over 8 years. No? Okay. Never mind. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I guess here's the question. What is the number the Royals were hoping he'd say? Like, just real quick. Was it a year's thing? Like, do you think if, like, maybe they were trying to find out, because Juan Soto's still a very young player.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they thought Soto knew that baseball's collective bargaining is going to go up and he wanted, like, a, you know, rather than, like, bother with all of these opt-outs that come with any large contract similar to that as a Bobby Wood Jr. one, that instead they were like, hey, we'll just give you a two-year deal and we'll pay you the $60 million per year and we'll do it for a two-year deal. And then you could just be a free agent again in your mid-20s. You help us win for a couple of years. You make a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. You go get your massive check after this. I just think the problem is waiting on this. If you're Soto, if someone will give you $600 million in Major League Baseball, guaranteed right now, you take it. Why risk what would happen 2 years from now? Take $600 million. I guess the question I have, and if we have JJ on here soon, what is the number in which you think you could have signed Juan Soto at? Like 500 and you were in? 400 you were in? Was it a year's? A per season? Was it, you know, you needed it to be 550, not six?
Could they defer? Somebody from the text from the 913 asks if the Royals could defer money like the Dodgers did. Is that even possible?
Not to that extent. I don't believe. Personally.
Man, could you imagine, though, for just a minute, Soto playing the outfield, and then all of a sudden you got Witt, Vinny, Salvi, Soto in the middle lineup. Ooh, ooh.
And eventually Caglione, Cole Reagan's on the mound.
Why can't I just get one impossible dream to come true?
Yeah, and sign Alex Bregman, too. I mean, we're good. Yeah. And all of a sudden we're the Dodgers. Okay, I mean, like, you know what I mean?
You know how many shirts they can make?
They called. This came up because the Royals called.
Yeah.
They thought it was serious enough that it was worth a phone call. It was reportedly a very short phone call, but it was a phone call.
I bet it was.
How long do you think it lasted? 2 minutes?
I would love to know, deep down, the honest answer, did they call specifically for Soto, or was it one of those, there's a different client that we actually do think we have a chance to sign? And, oh, by the way, one more time, can you tell us, what's kind of the range worth, what are you guys kind of looking at for Soto?
That's probably more likely.
Oh, okay, cool.
Okay,
so we called you about Soto. That's what I think happened. That's complete speculation. I just don't, they're well, I mean, they know...
Scott Boras is
the number that exists.
Someone said $300 million and 5% ownership of the Royals.
You can't do that, but I mean, sure, you can, you know.
Oh, hold on. You can't do that, but the Dodgers can go ahead and do whatever the hell they want, Cody?
Brandon, well, look, we're all playing on a rigged deck.
That's what I'm saying.
At this point, sure. Yeah, you know, you're right. The Royals should be able to give away partial ownership of their team if the Dodgers can just defer Juan Soto's contract till 2080.
Yeah, it can be Juan Soto Field at 119th and Nall in Overland Park, right, guys? That can be what they do with it.
Sorry, now you've got me down a rabbit hole of looking up his current active clients.
Okay.
One is MJ Melendez. So maybe they're just trying to get, you know, something done for him.
That wasn't his original. He switched in the last year or two, didn't he?
Yeah, that wasn't his original.
MJ was playing in some celebrity poker tournament I saw in Vegas.
Really? Whatever.
Yeah, there's a whole poker tour going on right now out in Vegas for celebrities. And he's playing it. I don't know how he's doing, but he's playing in it.
Get him over at the next poker game in my house?
I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure he'll be right over.
I don't think we're playing.
Same thing. You can shoot your shot. You can give a phone. That'll be a quick, oh, thanks, man. No problem. Same thing as a Soto ask. Yeah, quick, you asked.
He doesn't like a home game?
Worth a shot.
Better chance. Gold gets Sidney Sweeney, Soto signs with the Royals, or you get MJ Melendez.
MJ in my game is 5-4.
It's still more likely.
Because I'll just tell you right now, like, if we put it like a big game together of stakes that maybe excite MJ enough, like, there are, like, a lot of those guys play cards.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like,
I'm sure the stakes are the same in Cody's house.
He could go and see Cody's decks. That also is a part of the deal.
He gets to experience all four decks on the house. Oh no, he'll own my banana.
Excuse me.
That out of context is not going to make sense. 2 years from now, I'm not going to remember why I said that.
Okay, Cody, let's get to the random question of the day.
For you, Alex, for you, Drew, on the text line, 913-586-7965. As a reminder, the fan club starts in 10 minutes. Our guest has arrived, Drew. So when we go to break, if you could let Haley Lewison, okay, who will join us in a minute. We could ask her this random question as well. So I just got sent one, so I guess I'll ask this question because as an adult, I have it any single time, so I'm curious. When is the last time, or do you still put together an actual Christmas list? Not like a, hey, what are a couple of things, and you fire off a quick text, as in you put together a list for anyone who might be asking for gift-giving purposes for you, and it could be anything off this list you would be satisfied with. Do you still put together a Christmas list? And if not, when is the last time you did? I haven't done it since I was in middle school, I think. That was the last time I put together a Christmas list.
If you want me to answer real quick, and then I'll go down and
go for it.
I need to make my Christmas list right now because my parents and my siblings have requested it. I made a Christmas list as early as last year. I'll be making another one here this weekend.
Yeah, so for me, it's what you were saying, though, Cody, where it'll be like my mom or dad would be like, hey, send me a few things that you
missed. And you just fire off a text, right?
I'll either fire off a text or I'll go into notes because I'll put a link to stuff. So if it's an online purchase, and it'll be like, you know, the five or six things that I would.
So you're kind of putting together a list.
It's not like I don't send it out to my siblings or anything like that.
Every year I struggle with this because I'll get the text and be like, hey, what do you want? And I like, this sounds like I'm not trying to be like, sound like I'm granted this. I don't feel like I need anything. I'm like, I don't want any of this stuff. I'm just asking you for things. Like, currently, you're like, Cody, what do you need? I'm like, I don't think I need anything. Like, I don't think there's, like, something I've been, like, pining for. I've been thinking about getting a new toaster, so I guess maybe that. My toaster is, not even kidding, 23 years old. That's an impressive run for a toaster. So maybe a new toaster? It always just feels
that's
like
really
house stuff.
Depressing.
What else am I supposed to ask for?
Yeah, I want a new two-slice toaster.
Look, I'll tell you right now, if you send me any Christmas list with a gift on it more than $200, you're a selfish person.
Are we doing the show exchange? Are we Jurors down we letting in Haley Lewis for fan club in a second, but are we doing a show gift swap? That result, have you be honest, have you used my gift? There's the birth, there was the
yeah, once. Okay. I've used it once so far. Okay. It'll probably get used in this next holiday, actually. Okay. When you gave it to me, good timing, but now we're entering smoked bourbon season. Okay. Does that make sense?
It was a smoke, for those who remember, it was a smoke kit. You got the Reese's Pieces or whatever, those, or the peanut butter cups. Those are long gone. Everybody at Stations ate those.
Yeah, I brought the bundle back in.
I don't know what. Yeah, we'll have to get this figured out of here pretty soon.
So, yes, I have used your gift. I will use it more as wintertime approaches. But, like, yeah, I just don't, like... They always ask, like, part of it is, like, I'm with the text line a little bit, too, which is, like, they always ask me for a list, and they just buy me exactly everything off of it. I don't like it. I want a little bit of a surprise. Like, I felt like part of what I always took gift-giving as a challenge of, I know you so well, I've carefully thought of something I think you would enjoy, and I want you to enjoy it. But as you become an adult, I understand this idea because I won't return anything. Anything you buy me is a gift I'm keeping. I will
you won't
not...
Anything.
I will not return a gift. I feel the guilt is too high. Like, let's say you buy me something, like, just as long as it fits, right? If it works or fits, I'm not going to return it. But, like, let's say you buy me, you're like, well, Cody likes to bake. I bought him this thing for baking. And it's either something, and it's something I'm like, I'm not sure I'm going to use it. I'll keep it for, not ever, but, like, I'm not going to return it. Like, that's not how I operate. So, like, I'm going to continue to, like, work in that realm. Someone says espresso machine would be a great gift to give. Man, those are expensive.
Some of them are fancy.
Some of them are thousands of dollars.
Some of those are very fancy.
Thousands of dollars?
That have like the milk frother or whatever built into them. You know what I'm talking about. Like that stuff adds
up. Someone said they haven't done one since middle school as well, but their high school daughter's list was 3 pages long. That's crazy.
Hey, the kids can make however long of a list they want. Doesn't mean they're getting everything.
No, the text line is crushing me for my super old toaster. It's not 23. I had to think. I'll have to reevaluate the number. But
it's time for a new toaster, man.
I got it
it's
when
time for
I
a new
was.
One.
Oh, maybe it is that old. I got it when
it's
I was
just a cheap one, or is it actually like really nice toast?
Just a Black & Decker 2-slice toaster. Still toasts. Why do I need a new toaster?
Yeah.
Still toast bread.
That's a good point. You should.
Normally, I mean, it's just a toaster. It's not like not a fridge. It's not like inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
I got it when I moved into my first apartment. I was 18 years old. I bought that toaster when I was 18 years old, and I'm still using it today. So it's 22 years old.
The toaster?
Mm-hmm.
is 22 years old. It might just be time for a new one.
What a run. You know what? Kudos to the engineering
on
that one.
Your toaster is almost as old as morning show producer Mac. It literally is almost as old as Mac is.
I bought it when Mac was a toddler, and I've been using it ever since.
Like, do you clean out the toaster? Like, are there crumbs from a piece of wheat bread from 20 years ago in there still?
No, just like anything else, I clean it out. And I'm going to tell you, the toaster's gotten some use. Plenty of use.
Clearly.
A lot of toast, bagels, whatever.
A lot of toast.
I think I kind of want... I think I want a four slice, you know? Or like a toaster oven where I could like...
There you go.
A little more flexibility in the way that I toast.
What's more likely that you get a new backpack, Texan wants to know, for your daughter?
She's not getting one till the end of...
Or a new toaster.
I'll get a toaster first.
Oh, how rude.
She's not getting a new backpack till the end of elementary school. We're riding that one out two more years.
The backpack came up, I think it was last week. Something about what you were spending or what you would spend. And somebody was like, man, you can't get your daughter a backpack, but you want to... I forget what topic it was, but the backpack came up last week as well.
All right, up next, it's a Fan Club Friday here on Cody and Gold. We'll talk some Chiefs football. We'll also get an injury update, I believe, from Andy Reid on the official status, perhaps for Minnehue and Pacheco. Haley Lewis from KCSN is going to stop by next.